Third hour, Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game on this Thursday afternoon. Darren McFarland, Chase McCabe alongside. We're down here in Big D. We're leaving Dallas after today's show, so we'll be back home and back on the airwaves in Nashville for the first time in 2020 tomorrow as we wrap up the week. Let's bring in Adam Kaplan. We always enjoy our conversations with him. He covers the league, has been doing it for a long time, the league being the NFL. He is an NFL insider, and he now joins us. Adam, Happy New Year. How you doing?
Guys, Happy New Year to you. Looking forward to this weekend's games. And, you know, the Titans have won. It's just going to be fascinating, really, in New England. And for the record, I did pick the Titans to win the division. I didn't get that right, but at least I got them in the playoffs.
Yeah, we just played an interview we conducted with Rashawn Evans, and he's a fantastic guy to talk to and obviously a really talented player. So we talked about the matchup with him. Before we get into that, I do want to, because we're down here in Dallas and we've been down here all week, when you turn on Sports Talk Radio and we're out, you know, whether we were driving to the Cotton Bowl or whatever, flipping on down here, as you can imagine, they are talking about this Jason Garrett saga. And they've met twice. I guess there's going to be a third meeting. I don't know what in the world they're going to learn from this. He's been their head coach for almost a decade, Adam. Where is this going? How is this end? Is he back or is he gone, in your opinion?
Well, it's really interesting. So I talked to a couple Cowboy sources the last 24 hours, and Jerry Jones, the owner/general manager, and Jason Garrett, the head coach who has his contract expiring, had a series of meetings to go over everything top to bottom about the processes, personnel, everything, what could have been better, what kind of improvement. It's not that they don't have these meetings after every season, but these are a little bit more urgent and more detailed. What's interesting is I'm told that some of the coaches had their contracts expire yesterday. Now, there's some coaches who have been in the building that still are under contract. Kellen Moore, who's their offense coordinator, signed, I think, a 2-year deal. Mark Colombo, their offensive line coach. Some others are in the building, but some had their contracts expire yesterday. And they're still actually, the guys who had their contracts expire, they have to kind of find out what Jason's going to be doing in the future, though I doubt he'd be a head coach this next season for another team, just because there might be some better candidates. It wouldn't rule it out, especially with the Giants, because he has a history with the Giants. But overall, these guys have to know. So I think Jerry's just and Jason have had longer talks than they usually would. Yeah, the players had their exit interviews. I talked to some of the coaches. They had them on Monday, so I don't know why Jason Garrett put some of those off, other than because he's talking to Jerry so much. But it is a little bit strange that it's gone on this long. I know there are a lot of conspiracy theories out now with Jason Garrett. Maybe he stays and takes a personnel executive job. No one knows yet because, as you see, there's been no reporting on it. No one really knows what Jason Garrett's future is going to be. I just, like with everyone, though, I would agree, the longer this goes on, the more you have to wonder, are they going to find some way to keep him in some capacity? We'll have to see.
Yeah, interesting. Ryan Tannehill has the best passer rating of any quarterback in the playoffs. Derrick Henry is the leading rusher. What was the leading rusher in the NFL? A.J. Brown is certainly a Rookie of the Year candidate. Those are the big three on offense, and the Titans have, since Ryan Tannehill has taken over this year, has had no problem scoring points. You know Bill Belichick is going to want to take somebody out of this game. If of the big three, which one do you think they have the best shot of completely taking out of the game? That's what the Patriots do.
Well, the best way to answer is, what do I think they'll do? And I think they're going to try to take out Henry, because the one thing is, and if you look at Tannehill's pass attempts, it's very clear to me that Arthur Smith, the OC, has done a great job designing their play-action game, talking to people who've graded the Titans tape. They might have the best play-action run game in the NFL. They're just so effective at it when they use it and everything. If you stop Derrick Henry, then you make Ryan Tannehill be a passer. So then the question is, because he hasn't had to do it since he's been with the Titans, really, if you have to ask him to throw the ball 35 to 40 times, who are you worrying about other than A.J. Brown? Now, obviously, A.J. Brown has been tremendous, way better than anyone expected. He is maybe, this is from people of greatest tape, the best rookie receiver beating man coverage. He's just amazing at it, where Corey Davis is not as good based on tape study. But the fact of the matter is, their bread and butter is running the football. They come in, this is what they're telling you what they're doing. They're running the football. They're designing play action off that, and they're getting the throw to A.J. Brown, and that's it. And Jonnu Smith a little bit with run after the catch and a little bit with Corey Davis, who really has fought off this season. But that's their offense. To me, you stop Derrick Henry, you're asking Ryan Tannehill to do something he hasn't been asked to do a lot, that's throw the football a ton.
Which of the four games in Wild Card Weekend intrigues you the most, and why?
That's right up there. The Titan at Patriot game is probably number one. The matchups, I'm expecting Logan Ryan to be on A.J. Brown. Logan Ryan, the former Titans, Patriots corner, I think he's going to cover Julian Edelman. I think that's probably going to be a great matchup. I just think the philosophies, it's the Vrabel, Mike Vrabel, the former Patriots player, trying to figure out what Bill's going to do, as you were bringing up. Who is Belichick going to try to take out? And funny, every time I talk to a coach about playing the Patriots, that's exactly what they expect. Teams generally expect Belichick to take out the bread and butter of what you do. So that, to me, would be the most intriguing. I'll be at the Philly game on Sunday. That was a game here in Philly where Russell Wilson probably had one of his worst games of the season. The Eagles turned the ball over five times. That's why they lost. The Eagles have been one of these teams where right when you expect them to die, they don't die. They're like they're just like this team you can't stamp out. And they've been a great story of perseverance, though. That line has changed. You know, the Eagles open up as a favorite now that the Seahawks are now the favorite in that game. That would be number two. Those would be the two most intriguing games. But by far, to me, the Titans-Patriots game is number one.
We're talking to Adam Kaplan, NFL insider, here on Darren Donick and Chase. And I want to go back to some of the coaching openings in the NFL. Freddie Kitchens gets shown the door after one season with the Cleveland Browns. And I know Josh McDaniels, his name's out there. I've seen Urban Meyer. Who do you think lands that job and also general manager, because Dorsey out as well?
Yeah, it's too hard to – there's no favorite other than Josh McDaniels would be number one. Josh McDaniels has to ask himself this question. Yeah, he's from that area, but he's turned down opportunities to interview for the Browns head coaching job before, taking his name out, saying he didn't want – you know, he just decided to stay. Now, some of that is believed to be because he's going to be the successor for Bill Belichick. Now, the Patriots have publicly denied this, but I could tell you that the belief around the league is that's absolutely the truth. So, Josh, the other thing is, how long is Belichick going to coach? You know, he's in his well into his 60s here, and you have to really wonder how much longer he'll go. So we'll have to see there. But that would be one would be intriguing for him, because there's a lot of offense on that team. There's a lot of talent there. But the front office structure is, you mentioned the John Dorsey firing it. It's ridiculous what the Browns did there, because they wanted to reassign Dorsey to be a personnel director, which he was, by the way, with the Packers. Of course, he's not going to go for that. Now, they're just, the way I understand it, they're just going to pay his salary, the rest of it. He was 2 years into his deal, and they'll just live with it, because we know Jimmy Haslam, the owner, is one of these guys who likes to pay off ex-coaches and ex-executives. This is what he does. So I would say McDaniels, but the problem is we don't know how much interest he has in that job, so we don't really have a favorite yet. They have a favorite going in. It would be Josh McDaniels. That's my understanding. Matt Rhule, I believe, is not going to interview for that job. And Matt Rhule, by the way, look, Matt Rhule is not a secret. He wants to be a head coach in the National Football League, but he wants a good situation. And let's not forget the Jets denied him his chance last year. They offered him the job, but they want a specific play caller last year, and he said no to it, so he walked away from it. So you got to see what happens there.
Do you think the Giants would be a good fit for him, or the Panthers?
Yeah,
or?
You know, and he worked there, guys. I mean, he worked there for a brief amount of time. Here's the mistake the Giants made. They with Matt Rhule, and by the way, he's got the most leverage, and he's by far the number one head coaching candidate. I would say McDaniels is number two, a very close number two. If you're Matt Rhule, why would you walk into a situation that you've got a general manager in Dave Gettleman, who most people believe is not really that good? Not bad, but you know, he did draft Daniel Jones, and that's a good start. Gettleman has not gotten off to a good start in his first 2 years. What they should have done is not – they should have found out whether Rhule's willing to take the job with Dave Gettleman being the general manager. We're going to learn now, because Baylor played their game now, so he's free to interview. We'll know within the next 24 to 48 if they're going to be able to get an interview with him, so that won't be interesting to see.
How surprised were you that Doug Marrone and Dave Caldwell were retained in Jacksonville?
Here's what I'm told by Jaguar sources. The players on Monday, when they met with owner Shad Khan, were effusive in their praise. They love Doug. The problem is with the roster. The problem really was with Tom Coughlin, who was fired as their director of football operations. He did a bad job. He's alienated some of his players. including Yannick Ngakoue, who they're trying to re-sign as one of their best defensive ends. Getting Tom out of there is going to help. But I think overall, they just have to draft better. That certainly has been an issue. That's another team that's going to have an interesting offseason. They got to continue to develop their quarterbacks. But when you look at that division, I think the Titans, quite frankly, it's why I picked them. They're the best setup for the future. And now obviously, we have to see with Tannehill what kind of contract they could put together. And obviously, they want to keep him. That goes without saying. But they're the best team that's set up for the future with front office structure, roster, and coaching.
So let's talk on that for a second. Tannehill, what do you think you would give him? What do you think he gets?
I probably would not go. I would see a contract with a 2-year structure, very similar to the one that Nick Foles signed for, $20 million plus. That way, if it doesn't work, you can get out after 2 years. I can tell you this. There are a lot of quarterback coaches and coordinators I've talked to in the last couple weeks that are big Tannehill fans. They just, you know, because when you look at it, this kid's got a good arm. He's very athletic, high character. No one's ever seen him play to this level. I mean, the accuracy and the big play, no one's doing better with big plays right now. And he's, you know, the quarterback position, guys, you could always reinvent yourself. You don't have to be great at 22. You could be very good in your late 20s, or in Kurt Warner's case, mid to late 30s, Rich Gannon. I mean, so I think the Titans finding their future quarterback, it doesn't matter that he's not a young guy anymore. That's just irrelevant. I know people brought that up. It doesn't really matter at the quarterback position. It's just going to do the job, and with this coaching staff that's done a great job of developing him, they're going to keep him. It's just a matter of what kind of contract could they put together. And again, I think it's going to be a 2-year structure. That's typically what you do with journeyman guys or guys who have not really put together for one season. And again, I think the Nick Foles contract makes a lot of sense to me.
What about Derrick Henry?
Yeah, and again, I know people are panicking. Like, folks, he's under contract until mid-March, so don't worry about that they haven't really made an offer yet. It doesn't matter. They also have their use of the franchise tag or transition tag. I don't expect him to go either, and I don't see a way. There's just no way they're going to let him go. He's their bread and butter. He shows he could play hurt. I give the Titans credit for not playing him 2 weeks ago. I mean, that was their plan because they had nothing on the line. That was a very smart thing by Mike Vrabel and John Robinson to decide not to play him. And, you know, you look at the Titans' decisions this season, one of the reasons why they're still hanging in there for the playoffs is because they mostly have made the right decisions. And, you know, when you're a young team like this, you want to help them as much as you can from a front office and coaching perspective, and they've done a really good job with it.
Last thing, Adam, you said you were going to be at the Eagles-Seahawks game to close out Wild Card Weekend. Most people believe Seattle's going in there, including me. They're going to go in there and win. Do you agree or disagree?
I think it's tight. I think it's a real tight game. The Eagles kind of know what they have to do. The Eagles, unfortunately, have suffered significant injuries since then. Some of the Seahawks, by the way. The one thing about the Eagles, guys, is I've learned not to underestimate Doug Peterson, their head coach. And by the way, no one better with points against this season on defense than the Eagles. I don't quite understand what it is about this, no matter how many guys they get hurt. Their home and road splits are just ridiculously. I mean, they're giving about 16 points at home. They do a great job. I'm going to pick the Eagles in an upset here. I haven't picked them a lot this season, but I'm going to pick them in a small upset.
Good stuff. Adam, always good to talk to you. Thanks for doing this. Once again, Happy New Year, and we'll talk to you down the road in 2020.
Same to you guys. Thanks.
All right, Adam Kaplan, NFL insider, bringing it as always. Good stuff from him. We'll come back at the bottom of the hour, by the way. We'll hear from Titans head coach Mike Vrabel. More of Darren, Donick, and Chase from Dallas next on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Don't forget, if you missed any of today's show, we've moved our on-demand audio to Apple and Spotify. Search Darren, Donick, and Chase in Apple or Spotify, or you can log on to thegamenashville.com to find our daily audio. Rate it, review it, and subscribe today. Elliot Friedman coming up at 1 o'clock every Thursday at 1. He's brought to you by Carrie Zier, Remax Elite. So we're looking forward to get into a good hockey discussion, as always, with Elliot Friedman. So that's coming up at 1 o'clock. Also, good stuff there from Adam Kaplan. I'll respectfully disagree. I don't believe the Eagles beat the Seahawks. I think Doug Peterson is a tremendous coach. I do. I mean, him and Frank Reich, they really, like, they impress me. Like, those two guys, no matter, I feel like they face adversity, they lose bodies, they get all kinds of injuries, and those guys always find a way to dig their team out of it. But I just don't, and I know Seattle has, obviously, they signed Marshawn Lynch.
Right.
They've
because
had
they're beat
all
up at running
kinds
back.
Of injuries at running back. They have lost basically everybody who was suited up. They were giving the ball to some guy named Homer in their final game of the regular season against the 49ers. His last name was Homer. I have no idea who he is. And he got the ball a lot.
Yeah.
Because they've lost the three running backs ahead of him. Chris Carson was having a tremendous season, and, you know, he's lost. And so they just had a rash of injuries in Seattle. So they've been banged up, but I just think they get it done. I think the Saints are going to win. I think Saints and Seattle are going to win. And then I think the two AFC games on Saturday are – those are hard ones to predict.
Yep. They're both going to be close.
I really feel that way. I think the Bills, Texans, Titans, Patriots, it's coming down to the end.
But, look, and I was reading some predictions on NFL.com, and for me, you know, I think the Bills go into Houston and beat the Texans, and I think the Titans go into Foxborough and beat the Patriots. So two road teams I have winning on Saturday. Seattle, I think this could be a good weekend for the road teams, except for Minnesota. I don't think Minnesota is going to win, but so I like the Bills, Titans, Saints, and Seahawks.
I'll tell you the one thing that does scare me about the Bills Texans game is the Texans lost their last two home games of the regular season.
Yeah,
they got booed in the Denver game.
They did. Look, and I think this should be definitely a discussion that's on the table.
And the head coach. We've already talked to Sean Salisbury and others down in Houston. It's I don't understand it. We're from afar. We're not there. We're not around him. But he's won four division titles in the last 5 years, Bill O'Brien.
Yeah, but he's only
won. As the Texans head coach.
One playoff game.
And it's everybody we talk to, it seems like they are just waiting to pounce and to get him out of there. The fan base does not like Bill O'Brien. I don't understand that. But
well,
if they lose again, they lost their last two home games. They've got a coach that knows he needs to win. So those are probably two things that do scare me, though, about the game. At first, I was like, I really like the Bills, but I don't like the Bills as much. In fact, I'm starting to go the other way because I think there's a lot on the line for the Texans. I really do. Like, nobody's in trouble in Buffalo if they lose that game.
Right, but I
but
could totally
there could
see
be consequences if the Texans lose.
I mean, I think there could be a coaching change if they lose. Like, I really do. And I know that's silly to say, but here's the problem. And we've talked about this before. Bill O'Brien is not, you know, the most media-friendly guy. I mean, he's kind of like Belichick in how he goes about it that way. And as we've discussed, that's fine if you're winning. You can do that when you win. And he's won division titles, gets his team to the postseason every year. But in that market, they've only won one playoff game. And so when they're losing in January, not winning any games, I mean, that's a problem. And so the fan base turns on him. The media is not going to have his back because he's so hard to deal with. And so that's why I think that there's a lot of that chatter there in Houston of him possibly, you know, being out or them wanting him out because he just – they don't win in the postseason. That's a problem. It's nice to get there, but you got to do something with it once you get there.
Well, it's right. It's what everybody's knocked Andy Dalton.
Yeah.
All these years. The success the Bengals had, but, you know, what was it? They would never won a playoff game.
Right.
But it's like, okay. But it's the Bengals.
Right.
So, but they were doing a lot of wins. So I know it's a double-edged sword, right? You're having success, but it's not enough success. So I don't know. I've kind of flopped on that game. I kind of feel like there's too much on the line for the Texans because I just feel like there's going to be consequences if they lose. So it'll be interesting to see. Speaking of that, we'll come back and we'll hear from Titans head coach Mike Vrabel. He's going to talk about the matchup on Saturday. So we'll hear what he has to say. Maybe he'll lend some insight maybe to where they are. Everybody's banged up this time of year, and so everybody's trying to figure out who's going to be available, who's not going to be available. Don't forget Corey Perry is going to meet with the league tomorrow. He is going to get suspended for that hit on Ryan Ellis. The question is, how many games will it be? I'll ask Elliot Friedman that, at 1 o'clock. But he is going to meet with the league tomorrow, and he'll know his fate. And I believe that he is definitely going to get suspended, and I think it's going to be a handful of games. I do.
You say five?
I say five or six is what he's going to get hit with.
Okay.
He, remember, he did this on a national stage.
Right.
In front of millions of people. It's not a good look for the league. I think they're going to need to send a message to Corey Perry.
Yeah. I mean, they should. It was a dirty hit.
Yep.
No way to put it.
We'll come back here from Titans head coach Mike Vrabel. On the other side, Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5, The Game. We've had a lot of fun here in Dallas. By the way, I don't think we're going to be able to hear.
Yeah.
Mike Vrabel. I don't think he's going to be available for his chat today.
Yeah, and I know they're doing things a little different this week with the game being Saturday. Today is essentially Friday when it comes to the game schedule, so things are a little wonky this week, so that could have something to do with it.
Yeah, so let's talk a little bit about our experience. It was really cool.
Yeah.
You know, and got a chance this morning before the show to talk to somebody who watched it and just how cool it looked on television. Unfortunately, they were unable to come to Dallas. But just what a spectacle it was. And to see how they converted that Cotton Bowl into the Winter Classic, it was just really cool. I thought it was a good day for hockey. And sorry, I got a little distracted by some news. I'll tell you during the break.
Oh, okay.
Interesting. But I thought it was a good look for hockey. 85,630 people there in the Cotton Bowl. Predators obviously had a great contingency of fans there, 20,000. They were loud and proud. And it was just a good day for hockey on their stage by themselves. That's what they do. That's what the Winter Classic is. It's the lone game. And, like, you know, it's kind of like the NBA's kind of taken over Christmas Day, right? I think NHL's tried to do their part because New Year's Day is not the same that it used to be, right? New Year's Day for college used to be college football's day.
Right.
And, yeah, they still play some college football games, but it does not have the feel.
They're later in the day. It's a couple of them.
It used to be all day, right? Starting at 11 o'clock, 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock in the morning. And then they were and all the way through the night.
And then that was it. It was just college football was done.
So obviously it's changed, and so it's not college football's day anymore. So it's a chance for the National Hockey League to get a little piece of the action or a big piece of the sports action on New Year's Day and claim some of it for their own. And so I thought it was well done. Obviously the result wasn't what everybody was looking for who's listening to this show, but overall, I just thought it was a huge success. So hats off to Dallas, to the league, to all the fans that showed up. Second highest attended Winter Classic ever. Congratulations to Minnesota. The Wild get to host next year at Target Field. Yeah. That was announced. We don't know the opponent yet. But congratulations to the city of to Minnesota. Because I think they've got big shoes to fill. I think Dallas really knocked it out of the park. I thought Cotton Bowl was a huge success there, the way it was set up and configured and just how it was done. So overall, I'd say two thumbs up minus the result. It's everything you're looking for.
Yeah, I agree with all of that. It was cool to be able to experience it. And, you know, we got a chance to walk around. I know Gina from promotions actually went down into the crowd and was able to take it in and experience that. That was the coolest thing is when the Predators scored and I could hear the chants.
Yeah.
Hear the Predators chants. And even the PA announcer, when he announced that there was 1 minute left in the period, you heard, thanks, Paul, even though it wasn't Paul McCann. But I thought that, you know, the Predators definitely brought it with their fans. And but it was a cool building, a historic building. We don't know how much longer the Cotton Bowl will be there. And so they did a good job converting it into a rink. And kudos to the NHL and Derek King, the ice staff, for they had to do it twice because of thunderstorms. But they got that ice surface looking pristine. And when Ryan and I got there yesterday morning for our show at 9, it was a little cold, but they already had it uncovered. And just looking at it, there was a couple divots here and there, but other than that, it looked great. So I thought that everyone did a fantastic job. Wish the Preds had been able to get 2 points. It was looking good there for a while, but got away from them there in the third period. Ultimately, the Dallas Stars take it 4-2. But it's an experience I will never forget, being a part of it. So very cool.
The pig races. Pete Weber suggests that maybe they were fixed.
Ryan.
Roham Yossi.
Yeah.
And Ryan. Joe Hampson.
Hampson. Yeah.
They didn't win.
They did not. They did not. I saw somebody post and ask if there's going to be a banner for Yossi, for Roham Yossi, if there was going to be a banner. I thought that was funny. I thought, and Pete Weber was hilarious with that, saying the National Enquirer was reporting that the races were fixed.
Yeah. Let's go to Jerry in Lawrenceburg. Jerry, what's up?
First thing, Happy New Year to y'all.
Happy New Year to you.
And the question I have about the Preds is, it seems like when they get behind, or like they did yesterday, that they lost their momentum. And it seemed like the other team, the Stars, were more attacking the goal than the Preds were more laid back, more playing defense than playing offense. What do you think needs to change to where there is more offense and more excitement so fans aren't leaving the arena early?
Okay. Thank you, Jerry. I don't think there's any doubt that I've been talking about this lately. There's too many times when they're too many bodies in front of the opposition. Yep. It certainly played out that way in 48 hours against the Penguins. Those two games, way too many bodies in front. Dallas created a lot of traffic in front, and the Predators have to do that more. There's just no doubt about it. Good things happen when you go to the net. Good things happen when there's traffic. Look, this league, at this level, goaltenders, if they can see it, these guys are just too good.
Yeah.
It's going to be hard to score on an NHL goaltender if they can see all the action. I don't care how good you are, or how hard your slap shot is. You can be Shea Weber. You can be P.K. Subban from the point. Look, yeah, sometimes they're going to go in, but more times than not, you're just not going to get it by an NHL goalie who can see everything. You have to take their eyes away or impede their vision. Or if you tips, change the direction of the puck. Good. And they're not doing that enough. There's no doubt about it. And it takes a commitment to do that.
They don't have that guy.
You have to have – I mean, the Red Wings for years, back in the day, when they would come to town, it's like you knew those – there are two guys on that roster that were always going to be hovering around the net. It drove me crazy. Like, somebody get the – you couldn't do it.
Right. Well, they do have one. You know, Nick Bonino has scored a lot of goals.
They made a living by Patrick Hornquist is a prime example of a guy that has made a living and a really good living around the net and has had a lot of success as a player. Living
Scott Hartnell
and hovering around the net. Scott Hartnell is another one without a doubt, and they have got to get some more guys that can do that. It takes a commitment. They've got to have more guys in front, and they've got to stop letting the opponent do that. There's just too many times when the opponent is dictating the action in their zone, right? And it's like you can't have that either. So there's no doubt they're not where they want to be, and I've said it before, it is going to take a commitment for them to kind of change it. They're going to have to get more defensive-minded. Really scoring the goals part, that really hasn't been their problem.
No, they've scored.
You can't. By the way, you can't play catch-up all the time, too. Sometimes it works, but more times than not, it doesn't work. You know, you're playing catch-up, more times than not, you're going to lose.
Well, they play catch-up or they get behind and they just, they can't. It's one way or the other. Like, if they're just rolling and get out to a big lead, then okay. But there's been so many times where they have a lapse in the second or the third period and it gets away from them. And then and like you said, playing catch-up, which they haven't been able to do. Going back to the whole net front presence thing, though, how many times have we seen David Poile over the last few years make a move in the season to get a guy like that? He did it last year with Brian Boyle.
Yeah.
And quite frankly, I think it was a mistake that they did not re-sign Brian Boyle. I think it was a big mistake that they didn't re-sign him because they're missing him. And it wouldn't have cost
that
much.
Okay, but who's out of the lineup?
Well, I wouldn't have signed – I mean, at this point, I wouldn't have signed Daniel Carr. I mean, that's looking like that was a miss. And he's doing well at the AHL level, but that's not why you sign him to a $1 million contract. So, and then in this lineup, I don't know. That's a good question. But I think Brian Boyle was somebody that sparked this offense when he got here. The power play wasn't working, but he, you know, is a power play guy and helped with that. And, you know, I think having that net front presence and Wayne Simmonds was one of those guys. It didn't work here. It's not really working in New Jersey either. But I just – they've made those moves for guys like that because – and they – when they brought Scott Hartnell back as a free agent a few years ago, that was another reason because they missed that net front presence guy.
Let's go to Steve. Steve, you're up next. Welcome in.
Hey, guys. First of all, Happy New Year to you all.
Happy New Year to you.
And look, so listen, you guys were there. I was at the game yesterday.
Awesome.
And I was also at the mob trying to get in yesterday. A couple things that I have not heard on your guys' show, and maybe they talked about it on the 6 to 10 show, but I've been listening since 10. I thought you guys might have an update on the unfortunate individual that passed away when they were in line trying to get in. But the bigger issue was the ultimate disaster around the arcade games and the Midway and so forth. Everybody I've listened to on the TV were saying how great it was and how experienced it was. You couldn't move. I don't know what they did to make it impossible to move, but you couldn't move, much less to get to the Stanley Cup picture. You stood there an hour. I knew some people that stood there an hour and a half, and they got cut off because the line had to close. The whole thing, everybody's talking about how great the setup was at the game. And I had a blast. And so my wife and I had a great time, had a lot of good Preds fans and Dallas fans, you know, near us. And everybody was very nice. And it was a good game until they took out Ellis. And that's a whole other issue. But the whole issue about the arcade, I don't know. Did you guys go through it at all?
So this is the stuff outside the Cotton Bowl. This is in the state, on the fairgrounds, that whole area. Is that what you're talking about, Steve?
Yeah, and also trying to get in because they only let the people in or they only showed them the one 5 or 6 section main step area. And the backup, you know, we spent 45 minutes trying to get into up through that. The whole process, I don't know what happened. And you'd think the fact that they host, you know, the Texas-Oklahoma football game every year,
right,
that they would have experience in how to fix that. But that whole process, and don't believe anybody that says the arcade and the Midway thing was a lot of fun. It was
okay.
A disaster. Almost everybody I talked to on the plane coming back last night, which was about 95% Preds fans, agreed. And that was the only downer. But the game was great except for the final score. And I'll hang up and listen.
All right, Steve. Thank you for the phone call. That's good to know. Look, we would need to hear from the fans. We would need to hear from someone like you and people because we unfortunately
we didn't go through that.
We didn't go through any of that stuff. We're inside working and, you know, we're oblivious to all of that stuff. So I'm certainly not disputing anything you're saying. You were very passionate about it. And I'm sure that's exactly what you and a lot of people experienced and felt like. But it's impossible for us to weigh in on it. Steve, that honestly was the first time we're hearing that. Now, we did hear about a medical issue with a fan, but we never got any updates or heard really any particulars on it. I mean, we're kind of like in our own little world in what we're doing. And so, and like I said, I brought this up earlier. It was virtually impossible to get anything on your phone or your computer. So, I mean, I felt like I was back in the dark ages. I was without a phone. I just for about a seven-hour window yesterday, I just felt like I couldn't do anything when it comes to updates on this. I couldn't even get people. I could barely get texts to come through.
Yeah.
Or go
so
out.
Could I.
Barely. And most of the time they didn't even go through. I had a lot of text messages failed. They didn't even I couldn't even text. So I'm sorry we don't really have anything to add, Steve, on all that stuff. Just because one, we didn't get an update. We did hear about a problem medically with a fan earlier in the day. Did not get any follow up, didn't get any details. The stuff outside that was going on, obviously we knew there was a bunch of stuff going on and there were a ton of fans over there, but we didn't have a chance to talk to anybody about their experiences. Or I'm sorry that it sounds like it was a jumbled mess.
Yeah, I wish I had more on it too, but look, it's an old building, so it was hard to get around. I mean, we had to go from our broadcast position to the press box. I mean, we had to go outside the stadium and walk around and then catch an elevator. So that's just kind of how it is. And, you know, you expected that to a degree because of just the age of the stadium. But, you know, outside in the Midway, the fair area, unfortunately, I didn't have a chance to go out there at all. So
we didn't get to play.
No, we did not.
We had to work, unfortunately. Doug, Bob, we'll get more phone calls on the other side to close out the third hour of Darren, Donick, and Chase here in Dallas next on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Mike Vrabel saying today that Adam Humphries has officially been ruled out and that looks like, I guess, Cleve Raymond is still in concussion protocol. So those are some of the things that came out of Mike Vrabel speaking today in lieu of their practice. I guess they're practicing outdoors to get ready for the elements.
I thought that was interesting.
In Foxborough.
That they decided to do that.
737-1025. Let's go to Doug. Doug, you're up next. Welcome in.
Hey, guys. Great show.
Thanks.
I want to run a premise by you guys and see what you think. So the year we went to the Stanley Cup Finals, I think it was an anomaly in terms of the way the league was going. We were able to win with fairly small guys, defensive players pinching, Freddie Goudreau being able to score in the playoffs. And I think we made the mistake of building our team around quick, fairly skilled but small guys. And I think it was just one-year anomaly. The teams we kind of ran through in the playoffs, St. Louis, Chicago, and Anaheim, two of them didn't even make the playoffs for next year. So I think we built this team not to win a Stanley Cup, but to try to replicate that year. Because it seems like Dallas, St. Louis, Winnipeg, they're going big and skilled, and they're wearing us out. And I just wanted to hear you guys talk about it.
Okay, thank you, Doug. Appreciate it. Look, I do think, and Chase and I have been talking about this more off the air. Everybody's got their own opinions on what's going on, what they need to do. You know, what is the perfect one? The league is smaller. I don't really know. People are going away from big.
Yeah.
Okay. Teams are not trying to get bigger.
They want speed and skill.
Speed and skill. And but here's the deal, Doug. Here's the part that's interesting. But there has to be a balance, right? But just because the league is going more skill and speed, yes, are there still big players? Of course. I think, honestly, look at how St. Louis won it last year, okay? You still have to play deep. Look at what – what did the Predators do in that run to the Stanley Cup final? They clamped down defensively, right? They made it virtually impossible to enter the zone. I mean, they were beating everybody to the puck in neutral ice. They made things extremely difficult. They became a defensive-minded team in that run to the Stanley Cup final. I'll go back to that word. It takes a commitment. And if you don't have those players – then you probably need to figure out how to get those players that are willing to spend some time around the net, because they're going to have to do that. I do believe this team needs a little bit more, what's the right word, edginess to
yes,
them?
Yes, I think
Is that a good word?
I think that's
edginess,
a perfect word, yeah.
A little bit more rough around the edges, a little bit more, so maybe a couple 40-grit sandpaper guys?
Yep.
Okay.
They need that.
I'm talking about on the ice. They don't have to be that way off the ice, but on the ice. Got to have – I don't want them to go as far as Marchand, because I don't think he needs to do that silliness, but –
they need a shift disturber.
Yes. A couple. Well, they need more than one.
Yeah.
And we're not talking about goons. We're talking about skill guys that can help you, but also can provide you some greasy, you know, you always hear greasy goals. Just the dirty work.
Probably
a hard hat.
This probably isn't the right name to use right now, but they kind of need a Corey Perry. They need a guy like that. Not, you know, not to the extent of
minus
dirty
the
hits, but you know, Corey Perry is not loved in many, many markets in this league for a reason, because of how he plays the game. But it takes a special type of player to get in those dirty areas and get the greasy goals, like you saw them get back in the day under Barry Trotz. I mean, that's a lot of those guys. You know, and the league's changed so much since then, too. But there's still a place for those types of players, and they're missing it. And I think they also need that off the ice, too. They need a guy that's going to get in your face if you don't play 100%.
Remember that Predators team that made a run to the Stanley Cup Final? They were faster than everybody, too.
Yeah.
Okay, that was the first thing that we started talking about in the Chicago series. Like, wow, Chicago looks old and slow. This is a team that's had a ton of success, and it's like this Predators team looks like a young, fast team.
Yeah.
And they ran circles around Chicago. They did the same thing in the second round with St. Louis. And then Anaheim, same deal. They were faster than those teams. So, but there has to be a commitment with defense. There does. You have to be committed defensively. And I do think you have to also be willing to do some of the dirty stuff, the dirty work. How about not dirty stuff, dirty work
right
in front of the net. Let's go to Bob in Antioch. Bob, what's up?
My family and I went to the Winter Classic, and I would give it an A++. It was fantastic. We went into the stadium, up those steps. That was Gate A that everybody's talking about. We got there about we went through it about 11 o'clock when it opened. Didn't have any trouble then. We went back out, and around an hour later, it was really, really bottlenecked and whatever. But it was a fantastic experience, and that's what I wanted to ask you guys. It seems to me like the Predators have done every single thing possible to put themselves in a position to host at least a stadium series game. And first of all, how many, besides the Winter Classic, how many other outdoor games are there for your two?
Well, Gary Bettman told us, and we played the interview. I don't know if you heard the interview.
No, I just got back off the plane about an hour ago.
Yeah, we replayed our interview with Gary Bettman. They're at the Cotton Bowl, and I asked him that question, and I asked him about, of course, the future of Nashville hosting one of these events, and he touched on that. He didn't skirt it at all. He said clearly, basically, that agenda is on my desk. It's stuff that we have talked about that. We want to come to Nashville, but he said there's logistics and some hoops that we have to jump through and overcome first. He said, I'm not going to get into that, but he said, it's definitely something we're actively talking about. But he also said that I think the number was 29 he threw out, that they have put on 29 outdoor events is the running total today.
Well,
so between Stadium Series and Winter Classics and all of that.
It seems to me like, and I want to get you guys' feeling on this too, do you think we would be more likely to host a Stadium Series game than a Winter Classic?
Well, I do think the hurdles that he's talking about that he didn't get specific are, okay, the Music City Bowl was always around New Year's. It's
right.
This year it was December 30th, but it's been on New Year's Eve before. And then, you know, it's the unknown of, look, the Titans are in the playoffs.
Right.
Who knows? They could be hosting a playoff game. So you could have that, and which would be around the same time frame as well. So I think those are probably some of the things that the hoops that he's talking about. Maybe you would move them. Maybe you'd play it at Vanderbilt. I don't know. Maybe you move the Music City Bowl to Vanderbilt. I don't know. There's ways to overcome it.
Well, they're going
to
have the MLS stadium, too.
We lost Bob.
We lost Bob.
I don't even have the ability to bring anybody up or cut them off, so I think he maybe hit a bad area.
But that is something to think about, too, that, one, if Vanderbilt, you know, builds a new stadium or does a significant renovation, that's going to open up opportunities to, you know, if they did host a Winter Classic at Nissan Stadium, they could move the bowl game over to Vanderbilt. The MLS stadium will seat about 30,000. I know that's not optimal for a bowl game necessarily, but, you know, that's an option you could look at for 1 year. I did ask Derek King when he was on with us, and he's in charge of the ice, of building the rink.
Because remember, it's not just for people who don't understand. You don't. It's not set up. You don't need like a 24-hour window.
It's like a two-week thing.
Right, this thing is set up and in place. I mean, they've been over there working on this for weeks.
Yeah.
We talked to Doc Emmerich, and the whole thing got blown up over this past weekend.
Right.
Because they had so much rain here in Dallas, they lost the ice. Everything. They had to start over. Gary Bettman even told us that.
Yeah.
Both of them told us they had to start over after this past weekend. So everything is – you got to have that space, that field, for a good week to 2 weeks.
So Derek King, I asked him that about that, and he told us that it takes about a week and a half, 2 weeks to build it. But the teardown process is obviously a lot easier. They could be out of there in 3 days. He said that if they were to come to Nashville and the Titans had a playoff game, they could construct they could tear the rink down and have it ready for football again in 3 days. Is how long it would take. So, you know, do you move the Music City Bowl?
Well, it would have to be. It
back?
Has to be moved. Like you, yeah. Well, no, but you no, at Nissan Stadium to still have it at Nissan Stadium. You'd have to do it before Christmas. It'd have to be one of the.
No, I mean like move it past January 1st because I mean there's going to be a bowl game on the 6th. I mean they're still playing bowl games. So.
All right.
Those are the options.
Nate, we'll get to you after Elliott Freeman if you want to call back. I think you are driving back. Sorry we couldn't squeeze you in this hour. We will kick off the fourth and final hour with Elliott Freeman. We do that next.